John Lawson's in the studio to talk local politics. Morning, John.
Kia ora.
Let's focus on what's happening today. 6 o'clock at the club tonight is a community meeting slash presentation about the wastewater disposal options for our community. The council and water care have been working for several years now on land-based disposal systems. And, John, I think they've settled on, you were talking about 5 options before. I think they know which one's the most effective and cost effective of the options. Is that right? Do you agree?
Well, the 5 options we were talking about were for waste disposal, solid waste disposal rather than liquid waste disposal. So,
are we?
Sorry, which you were talking about?
I don't know. What's happening at the
solid waste?
What's happening at the meeting tonight? Oh, no, not solid, not rubbish. No.
Tonight's talking about sewage waste.
Yeah. What's to be done with our sewage?
So it's at the moment they're improving the treatment works by putting that MBR membrane bioreactor on it.
Yeah, and that's been constructed as we speak. And what's that costing, like 24 mil?
Is it that much? I thought it was rather less than that. That could be wrong. I can't remember the price.
Some millions.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, no. Yeah. Actually,
to our rates.
Please don't quote that price. I think I got that number from somewhere else.
No, I don't recall it being that much. So it's going to improve the quality, but it's still going to be pumped out just near the bar, just near the end of Riria Kariopa Memorial Drive there.
So just to be clear on the quality, it will be so clean that if they were to put chlorine in it, a little bit of chlorine, it would be officially classed as potable water. So that's how clean it will be. Our councillor Lisa Thompson, there's one of these up at Merimeri, I think, and she's seen the staff wash their hands in the liquid that comes out of it. I mean, it must just look like water, I guess.
Is it Merimeri or Tecovita, somewhere up there?
Yeah, up that way, yeah. Some part of the district that we don't sort of
beyond the divvy.
Think about too much. Yeah, but the rest of the council has to. So, I think I got the 24 million from a number that was budgeted before quite a long time ago.
And it might well be the whole cost of the scheme rather than just for the MBR.
Yeah, but then I've also heard a number like 40 million for land-based disposal. So no one's I've mentioned this in a few interviews. I mentioned this interview with the mayor, and she didn't dispute it. Again, I'm like,
well, she probably couldn't remember it either.
it's an estimate. But if it is going to cost 40,
we need to look it up and tell listeners what it is. But offhand, I can't remember.
Yeah, well, no, I talked to the mayor last week. I said 40 million, and she didn't dispute it. And I've been talking about it for a while. I know it was an estimate. And it was probably the sort of estimate when the staff do a long-term plan and say, oh, we think we'll need about this much money to cover it. So it's certainly not a proper price. But if it's anywhere near that, then there isn't enough money budgeted. And I sound like I'm campaigning to not have land-based disposal, but I'm just asking the question, if it's going to cost that much and we've got basically potable water coming out of the end of the pipe, do we really need to spend all that money putting it into land?
That's certainly an issue which has been canvassed at the 2-monthly video meetings that have been held talking about it.
Yeah.
And I suspect that is something that some of the council officers would be pleased to see.
Not spend the money?
Yeah. But it's long been a position of most local people that they don't want it going in their harbour, even though it is cleaner, therefore they're looking at this option of putting it into the Wainui Reserve and sending it down one of the gullies close to the pine forest there. And one of the problems is, and I'm hoping we might hear more tonight, is that they've only just started doing the research on it to find out whether you can actually pour loads of water down there and it doesn't just all flow across the beach. which is the problem they decided they had last time they were looking at an option there.
Okay, if it's so clean, it probably won't matter anyway. But I presume they're doing soil tests.
Yeah, like, but it also seems to be an odd time of year to be doing them because we've now got a dry period and you probably know better than I do other ways of correcting for that and doing a 3-month test and there was, deciding what will happen when it's really wet and
I don't know.
It's not
that's,
wet at the moment.
That's not the part of the construction industry that I've had anything to do with. I just got the reports from the engineers saying what was what.
That's a question to ask tonight. But I would have explained.
Yeah, I would have thought what if you're doing it properly, you'd get a core sample of the planet basically, and get your material and then go and test it in a lab for how quickly it absorbed water and how much water it could absorb and how, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's the proper way to do it.
But that doesn't take 3 months.
It takes three months because it takes a month before you award the contract to the consulting engineer. It's a few weeks before they get started. then they come out and they take the sample, and then it's a couple of weeks after that that it goes into the lab because there's a backlog, and then they have to write a report, and then the boss wants to check the report.
Then they book a meeting. 3 months of doing tests, but maybe again we'll hear more tonight and find out what it is.
I worked in consultants' offices, so let me assure you what I've said is at least a possibility. Yeah, but 3 months of doing tests you'd want to do a whole year, wouldn't you? Really, if you're going to be that, if you're looking for that level of thorough.
Well, yeah, that's what was puzzling me. But maybe there's a way of saying, oh, we've had this much during the middle of summer, so if it was the middle of winter, it would work this way.
Yeah, and you know, another thought occurs to me that there's been talk about sports fields being put up on Wainui Reserve, and I would have thought that this would be a good way to irrigate the grass. yeah. But I guess the problem is in winter when the soil's already waterlogged. But really, this is all conjecture from us. The meeting tonight's at 6, and
in the club,
and
on Bow Street.
Are you going to ask questions, John?
I've got a problem because talking to Raglan's at 6 as well, so I'm not sure whether I'm doing a radio show or whether I'm going to be on the other side of the road listening to what they're talking about over there.
You can dash back and forth.
Yeah.
It's just like I can see it. I can see it out the window, John. It's not far away.
Yes. No, I've yet to work out what I'm going to do. Yeah. Mm. So there may be a radio show tonight, or there may not be, and I may be at the meeting, or I may not be.
You can replay my interview with the mayor.
Okay.
No.
That's a good long interview that will last even longer than the meeting.
Well, no, because I had another interview that I had two interviews that I had to do after that. And so I felt I did better. I find it very hard to interview because I'm not used to having – I'm used to trying to draw information out of people because I get a lot of people in the chair that you're in who've never been interviewed before on the Brit Shy. She's not shy, and we know that she talks, and it's – I struggled to contain. I don't really know how to do that. But I got to the point where I've got, okay, I've got 3 questions left. I've got 5 minutes. And I said that. And then we were a little bit more matter of fact. That last 5 minutes of the interview, I think, was probably listenable. But,
okay.
Yeah.
So I should just play the last 5 minutes and not the rest.
Well, there's an interview with Lisa from the week before, which is probably more informative, our councillor.
I've already played that one.
So, well, you're not saying the mayor's stuff isn't informative, but...
It wasn't concise.
But no, she's not. No, she doesn't do concise. And I think some people think she's trying to avoid things by just talking. But I don't think that's what she's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just her style.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so 6 o'clock tonight at the club. Are we going to talk about, what are we going to talk about next, John? The solid waste.
Yeah. Well, the other question, of course, is are they actually going to go ahead with it? Because if they... Oh. discover after their 3 months of tests, whatever 3 months means, that it's not going to work, then do they just say that's it? Because they have been looking at a whole series of options, including, as we talked about ages ago, up at Mangatawhiri Road, and are they just going to come back and say, well, that's not feasible, we're just going to carry on pumping it into the harbour?
Well, they were talking to a euphemistically named a developer. Were we presuming we knew who it was?
David Peacock, yes.
Raglan Land Co. Yeah, okay. All right, John's confident. Whatever the negotiations went on there, I don't think it went in a direction that the council thought was worthwhile, which I would suggest it was probably going to cost too much. So they seem to have abandoned that option, haven't they?
As far as I can make out, yes.
Yeah, so the council-owned land is probably the best option. And
but again, it's maybe a question for tonight. Have you abandoned it, or is it still an option?
Okay, note that down, John.
It won't be just you and me there. And one of my worries is that it's not being publicised all that well.
It was in the Herald, John. And I got someone, and the reason I know that is because a listener forwarded it to me this morning. Said, "Can you put this on your What Song Guide?" And talk and yeah. So all these things are happening.
Yes. It's good that the Herald's got a reporter in Hamilton who's occasionally covering Raglan stuff. So.
Yeah, maybe we should put something out on the notice board or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we talk about solid waste now?
Yep.
Okay, you've got all your things out of your system.
Well, the council's having a meeting talking about solid waste starting about 13 minutes ago.
Oh, okay, so that's happening right now. So they've got a report from a company called Eunomia, who are a consulting company, I guess, on waste,
mm-hmm.
and talking about various options, they're calling baseline, low-cost, low-carbon zones, wheeled bins, and high diversion. And their high diversion rate only achieves a 49% recycling rate across the district, which I thought that's not very much. Don't we do 75% here in Whangaroa?
Well, the estimates seem to vary, but yeah, it's around 75-80.
Yeah. So the first thing I will put in is they're probably talking about by weight, because you can measure by weight or by volume, and we don't have a weighbridge at the transfer station here, so it's you're charged by volume, which is why when you go up there, the guys get the tape measure out, measure up your trailer. So I checked with Rick that conversion factor. So I think 75% by volume is about 66% diversion by weight. I don't know. I don't know how they do that, because you know every piece of rubbish has a different density. But so I guess it's just like a rule of thumb they use.
So the rubbish that goes in landfill is heavier than the rubbish that gets recycled, because the rubbish that's recycled is largely plastic and paper, which is relatively light.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, and a lot of the rubbish has got food waste in it as well, which would be dense and damp. But anyway, 66% is still much higher than 49%. So why is it so hard for the rest of the district to catch up with us?
I don't know. Maybe we'll see the minutes from this morning's meeting and find out.
there's quite a lot to read in this. One of the other things I noticed, I was looking at, they have these bar graphs for all these different approaches, and there appeared to be more stuff being processed in some options and not in others. And then I discovered through one of the bar graphs that's because that was a reflection of the number of households and not anything else.
Yeah, because one of the interesting things I thought was a couple of maps which show how low density the population is in quite large parts of the district, which we probably know already, but I've not seen it mapped before. So it shows roads with less than 5 households per kilometre, or less than 20 households per kilometre of road.
Yeah.
And a large part of the district is in that category, which in part of the consideration of this is how much it costs to drive a truck along those roads just to pick up one bin.
Mm. And too much might be the answer. But do they actually do curbside pickup for most of the rural area?
I'm not sure. I know that
they don't out here.
Where we had a place out at Kairakariki, they were doing it along there, but that was an area with quite a lot of lifestyle blocks and not too far from Whatawhata. So
yeah, and the other side of State Highway 23 on where Kairakariki Road is, there's quite a big lifestyle subdivision.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and that would be worth doing. So I don't know. I think I need someone from Extreme to go through this. It's quite a long report. One thing I've noticed that the council is going to look at, and this probably relates to what you're talking about, the wheeled bins option, the number of households is more than doubled to get to the high diversion rate, but the diversion rate is nowhere near doubled. And I think that's probably because, there's so many numbers on this graph. I think what you're saying about the rural areas being included, if we want to increase our diversion rates, we have to include the rural areas, but they're not nearly as cost effective.
Yep. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what council comes up with, and presumably this is going to come out finally in the long-term plan. There's a proposal for that, so we're going to get consulted on it at that stage. So this is background information, really, and maybe and you and I only saw it yesterday, so we haven't really had time to go through it properly. And certainly I'm not an expert on recycling, so it's maybe something to discuss with, as you say, Extreme next time you talk to them.
Yeah, yeah. Half of them are away at the moment because there's a zero waste conference on down in Wellington, which so I wonder if
they should know even more about it when they come back then.
Yeah, is the conference on hold this morning while the hikoi arrives in central, because it's going to Parliament, isn't it, the hikoi?
Yeah, I did meet Rick on the hikoi in Kirirua, so yeah, there were people from Extreme there.
Yeah, yeah, and I know a lot of them are down at this conference, so they probably will. I can imagine most of the people involved with community zero waste organisations are sympathetic to the hikoi.
Yep. I was surprised how many people from Whangarau were at that Kirikiro one. So
yeah,
definitely over 40 people.
That you saw?
Yeah.
I
didn't see most of them. It's too big a crowd, but because there were probably about 6,000 or so people there.
Yeah.
Even trying to meet up with the people I was trying to meet up with, it was difficult to sort of say, we're close to the bush, and can you see the bush? No, I can't see a bush. The crowd was just too big to see from one side to another.
You don't use it. Protests in Hamilton usually are not, there's not much of a turnout. So I think for Kirikiriroa, 6,000 is quite a big turnout.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, it pretty much filled Victoria Street between Garden Place and somewhere near Placemate, Pack and Save, rather.
So, right.
Yeah.
That's good. Bring a bit of life back to Victoria Street. Needs it. So at this, my biggest concern about this and why we're paying attention to this solid waste review is that council will want to mess with Extreme or the people involved in administration in the council office like to have single contracts across the whole district, because for them,
it's simpler.
it helps keep their budget down in the sense of their own personal admin budget keeps it smaller. Uh-huh. But the effects of those decisions are quite substantial, and I don't know, 99% of the spend is what's happening out on the ground in all the various communities around the district. So trying to make it all work for the benefit of the admin approach is not, I don't think it's ideal. This sort of thing has threatened Extreme Zero Waste's existence in the past. It has threatened other community recyclers like Clean Streams on Waiheke. I think Wanaka Waste Busters were done in by this. In fact, Seabeck and Kai Tire as well, which is one of the forerunners before Extreme Seabeck. So these all community recyclers, just like Extreme Zero Waste, and someone decides, no, we're going to be efficient, we've got to do the best thing by the ratepayers' money. We can't waste their money, but there's huge economic impacts a huge economic difference for our community between having a community owned recycle centre and farming it out to a commercial organisation. And I did a study on this years ago when I was making a film about Extreme Zero Waste, and it is huge. It would be very bad for our local economy to take control of our recycling and give it to like waste management or someone like that. Yeah. I have numbers, but we're not going to go into them right now. John, what have you put in front of me? This is a map.
This is part of the report that we're looking at. If anyone's interested, have a look at the council agenda for today. And if you click on some of the reports which are in there, it's rather disconcerting, actually, because you click on the front page and it just gives you a single front page, but then you look more carefully and you see that there's all these other reports which are attached to it. And one of them has this map which shows the current collection area. So it does cover most of the district, but there's the more rural areas which are excluded from it. So most of the area up the coast north of us is not included in the rubbish collection or recycling area, and the same goes for the far side of the district.
So the remote area, the more remote areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I understand that.
What they're looking at in this report is whether they should extend it to the whole district or whether they should do a low-cost scheme, which pretty much restricts it to what it is at the moment, or maybe even smaller, So, yeah, as I say, it's going to come out in the long-term plan eventually, and we'll get another chance to look at it then.
And there's also the issue of what's happening at Te Uku, because that drop-off zone is an abused drop-off zone. It's costing ratepayers a disproportionate amount of money for what they get out of it. They are talking about closing it in this report.
Maybe they need to move it to a less prominent place. When
they could put it somewhere secret and not tell anyone.
Which is why the one at Tomato works quite well, because not all that many people go past it who aren't locals.
Yeah, well, who's going to go out there to dump their rubbish free? The cost of the petrol would make it not worth. Now, the other thing I too wanted to point out is in 2015, our former councillor, Clint Baddeley, convinced council to give Extreme Zero Waste sole provider status. Is that the right phrase, John?
I think that's the name we found, yes.
Yes, sole provider status, so that Extreme would be... Or it's recognition of the fact that Extreme Zero Waste is the only organisation that can provide the service that they can provide. There's no point going to tender because there is no other organisation that can do what they do. None of the commercial organisations, especially the... Who runs the Horatu dump site or the Hampton Downs dump site?
I can't remember the name.
Whichever waste company that is not incentivised to recycle.
Yeah, there's just a few big waste companies, yeah. Which provide most of the recycling in the country.
Yeah, so given that there was no one who could do the same thing as Extreme Zero Waste, and this is something councils can do, they were given sole provider status. Now, if that's changed, I think council should have to justify why that's changed. I don't know if it has. I'm just wary of threats to Extreme. I think it brings huge benefits to our community, and council and its staff are somewhat disconnected from our community and focused on making admin as easy as possible. Sometimes things can go wrong. So, yeah. I'm not saying this has happened or will happen, but it's just, I think we need to keep an eye out.
And Extreme has gone a different route to the big companies because they've used more manual sorting, which has achieved a better quality of recycling.
Sorry, say that again?
Extreme's gone a different route to the big recyclers. So they've achieved a better quality and probably given a better service to us and employed more local people.
So yeah, well, there's
benefits in all those directions.
The quality goes with the employment because they've got these big automated recycling centres, but they're just not as good at it as people. Maybe one day, and as they keep working on it, they might get better. I don't know, but they haven't been up till now. All right, so we have anything else to say, John? Or is that, I think we're probably going to get lost in the weeds.
We've covered waste recycling, and we've covered the sewage meeting tonight, so... but there's, as I say, it's 6 weeks since we last talked, so there's quite a lot of things which have been happening in that time. I noticed the water tower is already being redecorated. They painted it white, and now it's going various different colours with various designs on it, and it's obviously going to be built up as a design. I've not still seen the design for it, so there was a consultation on what ought to be in it, but I've not actually seen what the finished result's supposed to be.
Well, maybe it's a surprise.
Yeah.
Well, it is going to be a surprise.
Or maybe we can't complain if we haven't seen it. So when we do see it, it'll be too late to complain.
Anything else you want to say, or should we have a break and then work out what we do next?
Well, what's on there at the moment looks quite good, but it's obviously in the beginning stages of it. There's also the quarterly report on the buses. So the bus use has gone up again by 12.8% this time. And there's slightly more buses on time. We've got almost half the buses which are on time.
What does on time mean? Like, how late can they be before it's not?
They can be 5 minutes late or 1 minute early, and they're still counted as on time.
But okay, being early is not good.
And the bus is just going by now.
Is it on time, John?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay.
It's going out to Manu Bay these days. So, and from what I can work out, there's still hardly anyone catching it out to Manu Bay. And one of the issues is that a good use of $57,000 of ratepayer money to extend the buses to Manu Bay and have an extra bus each day at weekends?
Do you think that it'll grow a customer base?
No.
Oh. Normally, that's what you tell me. If we've got to put the buses out so that you can actually grow the customer base.
Well, that would work if it was possible for people out at Manu Bay to actually spend most of the day in Hamilton and then come back in the afternoon or something. But they can only spend just over an hour in Hamilton, and then they've got to catch the bus back, which if you're going to spend $12 catching the bus there and back, then maybe you want more than an hour in Hamilton.
Do you think the thought is...
I'm not sure that there was much thought went into it. That's the problem.
Do you think they think it's for tourists? So, or people just to get from Raglan out to the bay or bays?
The issue, I think, is that it was first suggested we ought to improve the bus service because we were looking at ways to sort out the car parking down at the wharf. Mm. And it evolved from that into saying, well, we ought to have a local bus service. So they then looked at a local bus service and got a consultant's report written who didn't really know the area at all. And they wrote a report saying, well, really, we recommend extending the bus out to Manu Bay and more buses at weekend. And they said the others won't work. And here's the figures to show that they won't work. But they didn't then come up with any figures to show why their proposal for Manu Bay was going to work.
This is a problem with councils. I remember being at a community board meeting and there was council staff who came out and said, we're looking at the bus situation, here's what we're doing. And I think Lisa Thompson asked them, have you seen the data that we gave to your council from a survey that we undertook a couple of years ago? And the guy's like, no, I'm new in the job, I haven't seen that. And they're like, okay, we're going to get that to you. The next time we heard from the council, there was another new person. So the complete lack of institutional knowledge is profound. And this is a problem that plagues councils a lot. And I've tried talking to people in council about when you get a new CEO, why don't you get one who's focused on making a place that's so good to work that the staff don't leave all the time? But that just seems too unimaginable, I think. And like they're like, oh, no, we've got quite good stats compared to other councils. And like, well, you're still losing, you know, heaps and heaps of people, and this stuff just keeps happening. So,
yep. So anyway, we're spending $57,000 a year more on buses. And I'll be surprised if we get more than 57 people.
Okay.
The other news on buses, of course, is that they're not carrying bicycles anymore.
Is that temporary? Is that because of union stuff? Or
No, it's because the ministry did some tests and decided that bicycles obscured the headlights of buses. And the bus operators decided, oh, well, if we can't run them at night, then they don't comply with the regulations. And if they don't comply with the regulations at night, then they're not complying with the regulations during the day either, because you don't have day and night regulations for vehicles.
John, are you just portraying that in a way that makes it sound completely idiotic? Is there a little bit more to it? Or?
Well, to me, it sounds idiotic.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's bureaucracy gone mad. And we kill roughly one person every day using mostly cars, but some trucks. And there's never been any incident with the bicycle on the front of a bus. And the same design is used all around the world. And they seem to work perfectly well. But somebody in the ministry decided that they ought to be banned at night until they sorted out this headlight issue. And as I say, the bus operators extended that and said, well, if it's a nighttime issue, it's also a daytime issue. It's a complete ban. And all the regional councils are scratching their heads over what to do. The ministry suggested tests that could be done to check the headlights and to improve the headlights if they needed to be improved. But as far as I can make out, that's not going anywhere at the moment. Anyway. I don't think we can say any more about it. That's what's happened.
Yeah, I'm a bit floored by that. Shall we have a little break now, John?
If you like. Yeah, now 28 minutes to 10.
Raglan Community Radio, at the heart of your community for 30 years.
Tune in and chill out.
Hey, you got the morning show here with Aaron. John, welcome back.
Thank you.
So,
still fluttering and the sun's still shining.
Yes, it's a nice day. And we've found some more stuff, council stuff to talk about. The long-term plan, pre-engagement feedback. I'm calling it pre-engagement. Is that the right thing to call it?
Yeah, so you might remember the council was pretty good this year. They decided they ought to talk to us about what we wanted in the way of council services, whether we wanted more or less and whether we wanted to pay more or less rates. And they got 803 responses to their question of what we valued most, which not surprisingly came out as roading as top. In the urban areas, equal with that was the three waters. And down at the bottom of their list was grants that are handed out to organisations like Raglan Community Radio and such like.
Yeah, and I asked the mayor about this because I think people don't quite, they see grants, they don't know what they're for. They're like, oh, let's get rid of those things. First of all, it's a tiny amount of money, so it's not really going to help to get rid of it. And second of all, my view on grants is that council gets a much bigger bang for its buck there because you're giving it to organisations that have a lot of volunteers or might be all volunteer run. And I said this to the mayor. I said, look, here at the radio station, no offence, but we could probably, it'd probably cost 10 times as much if council was running our service compared to us doing it because we've got a lot of volunteers. We run on the smell of an oily rag. And she said the ratio is not 1 in 10, it's 1 in 20. Because she's been involved in a lot of volunteer work before she was a councillor and before she was mayor. And she knows that stat, and she's been along to, like, she said she went along to Well Energy Trust and implored them to consider the importance of this work. So of all the money that the council spends, this is the single most cost-effective by some considerable distance.
Okay, so it sounds like we might get that argument coming back in the long-term plan. One of the arguments that's probably not going to come back in the long-term plan is the traffic light trial on Wainui Bridge, where it says the majority was unsupportive.
88% to be precise, wasn't it?
Yes. And it does rather worry me that we've never had a debate on this and we've never had the engineers explaining why they thought it was a good idea. So when it all snarls up, they're just going to say, oh, well, everybody said they didn't want it, so don't blame us.
Well, the only thing I read was that the engineers, I guess research shows that you can extend the life of a one-lane bridge by using traffic lights to manage the traffic. It doesn't take into account that we tend to have this informal system here where we take turnabout and we always, you know, it doesn't matter what the sign says. If we see a big build-up on the other side, we just stop and let them through. So if you've got a self-regulating thing like that, I don't know if traffic lights would be as useful. But according to the usual situations, it is useful.
Yep.
And they're trying to put off.
It seems to me to be one of the problems with this sort of engagement, that it's just a sort of tick box thing.
Well, this worked though, right?
Tick the box saying we didn't want it.
Like the mayor again said, no, we were pretty sure you guys didn't want it already, but we were using this as the final confirmation.
But as I say, we've never heard the argument for it. You and I have made the argument against it.
Well, I've made the argument for it, but I'm kind of guessing a little bit. Yep. But it must be. I mean, it must be research that shows that you can solve problems by putting traffic lights on. Otherwise, they wouldn't have even bothered trying to start. They'd just get on with replacing the bridge. And there have been people saying, coming to the community board meetings, saying, "When are we going to two-lane that bridge?" And it's been pointed out, like I remember well over 10 years ago, it was in the long-term plan. And it's always, when they do the long-term plan, this is long-term spending plan, folks, it goes out 10 years. The first 3 years are where they pin down all the spending for the first 3 years of that 10 years. Then after that, it gets a bit vague. And so it's always been, two-laning the bridge has always been in the vague area. And every time they do a new long-term plan, it'll say, I remember when it was probably 23. I remember over 10 years ago, they said it was going to be built in 2023. Mm-hmm. Now it'll be 33, probably.
Something like that.
Yeah, so that's what's been happening, in case you're wondering.
Next. One of the things that struck me about these responses was how few there were compared with the number of people in the district. So, as I say, 803 was the most responses they got on any of these questions. And
well, that's probably quite good.
70,000 people living in the district.
So. That's probably quite good by usual standards. I have to admit, John, I forgot. But also, I realised the publicity for it wasn't that great, and we didn't do a very good job either, like, of hammering it repeatedly.
I think as far as the council could do, they did quite a good job. They put it on their Facebook, they put out media releases about it.
And they made it quite easy to do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's, yeah, It is what it is. Yeah.
Maybe people are just cynical that the council's going to take any notice, so why bother?
Yeah, I mean, they do. Not always. And oftentimes, there's people with different opinions putting their, you know, their views forward as well, so you're not going to get listened to all the time.
Yeah, and I think we have got a different mayor now, so it's maybe a different attitude.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to take that into account.
Yeah, yeah. So what other stats did we get from that?
Well, there's a whole load of ones. I'm not sure which ones. I was interested to see that 29 people thought that zero waste was too aspirational, and only 17 people supported it. But again, that's way tinier even than the 800-odd that responded to the major questions. I don't know how much note we take of these.
But I have an issue with that question too, because it's asking a question. I mean, it's quite reasonable for people to say, heck, I can't see how we would actually get to zero waste. Like, we might get to 5%, but the honest answer is no, I don't think we will get to zero waste. So, yeah, it's too aspirational. So that's asking a question that's guaranteed to bring a negative answer. If the question was, do we need to do better? I think most people would say, yeah, we want to do better.
Yep. Well, yeah. I think this whole thing is open to question as to what was put to people and how they analysed them, because I noticed that they came to the conclusion that library services appear to be highly valued and well utilised across the district, so no change to the current level of service is recommended. And in order to justify that, they looked at the total number of people who went in and out of the libraries, which of course aren't just libraries, they're also council offices.
Yeah.
So in Raglan, we had 105,889 people going through the doors in the 2023-2024.
More than all the other libraries?
Yes, way above them. Huntley was the next biggest one. Huntley's more than twice the size of Raglan, but theirs was only 62,000 as compared with 105,000 in Raglan. So, yeah.
I mean, part of it is, I guess, what sort of whether you've got a population that likes books, but
also visitors pop in there as well.
Is there's a computer service?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's right in the middle of town, so it's very visible. Yeah. Oh well.
That's why they've come to this conclusion that libraries are highly valued. if they'd asked that question, I suspect they would have got a much lower response.
What if
do you value your libraries? And probably they've got 40 people saying yes and 20 people saying no.
Or the question is do you think increasing the size of libraries in the age of the internet is a good idea?
You
could preload the question. Yeah, I mean that's a very preloaded.
Do you think wasting your rates on libraries when they're internet is a good idea? Yeah,
I actually think it's a good institution to have. It's a centre point for the community. People go there wanting to find stuff out, and when we had the power cut, there were an awful lot of people in there doing their office work that they thought they were going to do at home that day. So I think we need those kind of institutions.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that it seems that they've looked at that one from a different way, in a different way to many of the other services they've looked at.
Yeah.
And I think if they looked at those in a similar way, they'd also say how valuable they were. And you were giving the example of the group grants to voluntary groups, and there's probably a few others in here. Funding more maintenance on our road network. That seems to be fairly split as far as I can see, and some people think it's a good idea and some people don't, and I think on balance they decided that they were probably going to keep it as it is at the moment rather than mend more potholes and put the rates up by 2%.
Well, they've got a problem that they've lost $34 million in funding from the government. The mayor wasn't over the moon about that, incidentally. and she was starting to repeat the government's line. Well, you know, the pie's only so. What's that phrase? The pie's only so big. There's only so much in the pie.
It depends how much you tax people as to how big the pie
is. I know. Because I said to her, I said, look, you're repeating the government's PR line here. I said that we can see from what's happened. They've actually. Well, first of all, you're talking about the government like it's a household. it's a silly way to talk about it because the government runs the economy and it just doesn't work like a household. And we can also see what the government's done. They've actually shrunk the pie. If they shrink their spending, if the government reduces its spending, it's reducing the size of the pie because they have that big an effect on the economy. And we saw that down in Wellington, the thing we keep talking about, how the cafes there are struggling because they fired all the bureaucrats in Wellington. And there are, the point of bureaucrats is not to support cafes, but it's just a sign of the effect.
Well, that's why they've got to go and work 4 out of 5 days in the office now, rather than
Yeah, well, that was the government solution. Yeah. It wasn't. Oh, yeah, sorry, that was our fault. It was like, oh, it's those people working at home. It's their fault. And then they went and found a guy who was a bit of an idiot. I suspect I've only heard about this verbally, but they always do this. They go and find an example of someone who looks like an idiot and winds everyone up and goes, oh yeah, those people are just slacking off at home. You know.
Yeah, but coming back to Raglan, closed circuit television's been on the agenda for a long time. I can't remember how long, at least a decade. And now, more recently, a couple of years,
like there's been concerted efforts for a couple of years.
They're saying discussions with Hamilton City have been placed on hold while staff explore a lower cost option.
So Hamilton City was going to charge too much for us to use their hub. They have a monitored room.
Monitoring it 24/7.
Yeah.
So that was the advantage. So I'm not sure whether they could do it any cheaper if they didn't go work with Hamilton. Because obviously they've got a lot more cameras than we're ever going to have in Waikato District.
Hamilton City has not been very cooperative, John. There's this, and then there was the whole Three Waters thing, where all the councils in the Waikato region were working on a combined Three Waters option, and then Hamilton City said, "Nah, we're doing our own," and they just walked out on it. And they had a very nice press release, and it wasn't until you read to the bottom of the press release you got the full story. But yeah, they're doing their own one, and they're saying, "Oh, they are aware that we're going to really struggle here because we're losing the Watercare contract." So they said, "Waikato District, you can join us," and they said, "And then the others can join us later on once we've got it set up." So they just want control over it, and this, so they're not really playing well with the other councils, and this is another sign of that.
As you say, they're all short of money and struggling to find savings everywhere they can,
and they've got huge debt levels at Hamilton City, and they're having a lot of squabbles amongst their councillors. One thing I say about our councillors is they don't squabble much. Hamilton City is
absurd. Which in some ways a pity, because people do have different views on how things ought to be done.
Oh, no, if you know what's going on at Hamilton City Council, if you've read the media items, it's just ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, no, I was talking to one of the councillors on the Hikoi, and she was filling me in on some of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's move on and carry on talking about Waikato. So we've been asking for a structure plan for ages, and they're now saying that there's a possibility, but it may not be the sort of thing we've done in the past.
So, John, you weren't at the community board meeting, but a council staff member manager came out and saying, yes, we're going to do it. Not saying it's going to happen right away, because there's others that are ahead in the queue. Whether they should be or not is another issue, but they are. But he started taking notes from the community board members about the issues that they were concerned about. And I wanted to have a say and put my hand up, but I got ignored. Because they weren't talking about low-cost housing. And I think if you're going to do a plan for your community, you've got a plan, especially this one, with our high tourist numbers and our problems. Like that same day, there'd been a post on the notice board from Raglan Rock saying, is there anyone out there? We've got staff, but they've got nowhere to live. Can you help us out? So I wanted to insert that in there. And it would be ideas like smaller section sizes, or what time do you have to go?
Apartments. I'm just looking at the progress of the bus.
Okay. Yeah. John's checking the app on the phone. There's an app, folks. You can check where the bus is at, and John's going to do that. So there was that that I wanted to insert into the discussion, but it's very early days for that. What the community board was focusing on a lot was the lack of commercial space. How's the bus, John?
It's still parked at Manu Bay.
Okay, so where do you pick it up from?
The library.
From the library. Okay, there's plenty of time for you to dash down there. So, the community board was very focused that day on, or what I remember, is commercial zone space, saying that, in fact, Kerry Binnersley was a community board member, was on at the meeting on Zoom, because she's had to move to Australia to get some work because she couldn't afford the rent was too high for her to afford her chiropractic, to run a chiropractic business here. And so she's gone. I presume she's working like for an institution over in Australia or something like that. So, and that led to a discussion, and there were some board members saying, oh, it's like a cartel out there with the landlords and certainly it's anecdotally known that our commercial rents here are very high, and someone suggested that we need a bit more deal with the supply and demand issue. Satnam didn't like that part of the discussion. I think I don't know why he was trying to say, well, just if you open up more commercial land, they're not going to bring the rent down. Like, it's a supply and demand issue. It might not, but he's
well, council
very
also
weird
some
to the
control
idea.
Over it, because a large part of the problem is that area that's undeveloped on we're near a street.
Well, they don't, but they can't make the leaseholder build on it.
Well, they could say that they're not going to renew the planning permission, which they keep renewing and rolling it over. So, and there is resource consent to build on that area and put shops there, but each time it comes up, the council says, oh, well, we'll give you another few years to get it done, which is not putting any pressure on them to actually get it done.
Well, no, I mean, traditionally councils have been, they're kind of there to facilitate development, and so they, it's always like an open door policy for developers. They can just walk into council, it feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but they could say you've got to go back and apply for another resource consent if you don't do it within some time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's been empty for well over a decade.
Mm. John, do you still like your idea of putting a multi-story development around by the wharf, because you told me once it's visibly out of the way behind the hill there?
Yeah, it seems to me to be the ideal place to build 4, 5, 6-story fisherman-type houses along there, which could look...
Fisherman-type? You're talking like in Europe, like...
Yes.
And the
you look around some of the Italian harbours and
yes.
places like that. They've got these really tall buildings, and in the old days, fishermen used to live there and be close to their boats.
And now they're probably all Airbnb places. But another thing we need is a cap on that kind of thing here. It's certainly, I know it's not the sole cause of our housing crisis, but it certainly coincided with it and hasn't helped.
Yeah, because we did look at doing the same as Queenstown at one stage, and that seems to have been dropped. So.
Well, I suggested it in the last district plan, but it just got ignored.
Well, maybe that's why we need a structure plan, yeah.
But it's like the way things seem to work with councils, everything's very slow, and so you suggest it and it gets completely ignored and they're confused about it, and then 10 years later they're like, yeah, of course we're going to do that. So hopefully that's what will happen.
Council's pretty much decided to carry on with its policy on motor rallies and closing local roads, despite the well-voiced objections of the Cario Coast Residents Association.
So there was and we haven't talked about this on the air, but there was a complaint made against Chris Rayner by a community member from Ruapuki about to the democracy people in the council, saying that he had a very biased presentation in favour of motor rallies and against their point of view. And that he was representing the community board. The democracy people said that he didn't do anything wrong, but I think they don't know what the Raglan community's views are on the matter, so I'm not sure that they're able to judge that side of it. And someone said that he spoke over your presentation. That's what I've been told.
He spoke after me.
And spoke after you, yeah. Okay.
So they allowed him to do that. But yeah, I know, I think despite what Chris said, the majority of councillors were keen on keeping things as they were. And if people are really concerned, they need to think of standing for council next year, not just here where we've probably got more supportive councillor, but in various places around the district as well.
Yeah, so that's a little thing I've tried to look into, but I haven't got far enough. I mean, I'm told that I know that Chris is a fan of motorsport, or at least that's what I've heard, and he says there's others who are fans. Is that right?
Well,
I'm not aware of them, but I am aware of the strong opposition.
There's quite a split in this town and probably in most towns as to whether motor rallies are a good idea, especially when they close rural roads, and then that's the concern that the people around the Carrioy Coast have got, that they get their roads closed and suffer the dust and the noise and
have stones sprayed under their property,
yeah. And have their roads broken up and then don't get anything for it.
Yeah, and I have pointed out the difference that the way Sound Splash is treated compared to motor rallies by the community board. Uh-huh. Sound Splash has their feet held to the fire on a lot of issues, and staff pulled out from Narawahia to talk to the community board and told to make sure that Sound Splash does everything right. And then the motor rally seems to get a free pass. They've certainly not been held to any kind of expectations from the community board, just encouraged. And I've made the comment to the community board that the people who enjoy Soundsplash are young people who don't really have much of a voice. And but for the younger generation in our community, they love Soundsplash, absolutely love it. And just because, you know, they're young, doesn't mean to say they should be ignored, I guess. Yep. That's what I was trying to say.
But and that's the way things seem to go. And as I say, people need to be more active in local government if that's going to change.
Yeah.
There were also various reports. Still got another 5 minutes yet.
Okay.
There have been various reports on the aerodrome and whether we need to... Or the progress on that, and there's very little report on what the progress actually is. So,
so that's the handing back to the original owners.
Yes, yeah. I noticed that they're saying it costs on average $15,500 a year to run the airfield, and the annual income is $4,400, which in most cases, unless there was good public good, they'd be saying this isn't worth it. But we still pay that money.
So that annual income, that's in the last financial year, is it?
I assume so. It doesn't say when it was. But
because I'm told by someone who mixes with the airplane people that the number of people flying to the Raglan, landing in Raglan, has dropped by a lot because they're worried they're going to be lynched when they land. Not literally the word lynch, they're nervous about landing here and what sort of reaction they'll get after they land.
Yeah, well, having a fence there doesn't help either, because it makes it more restricted, and if there's a crosswind, there's more of a risk.
Isn't there like a normal width for a runway now? Aren't there lots of runways that wide?
I don't know whether they have fences around them, do they? Not that close.
I don't know. Anyway, what do we say? Just be patient, folks, with that. It's going to be resolved at some point. Anything else you want to add, John, before we take off?
I think we've probably covered most of the things which are on there.
So. Oh, the alcohol bylaw workshop. Oh, in fact, is that open at the moment for consultation, alcohol bylaw?
Yes, it is. Yep.
So they're talking about expanding the length of time that we have an alcohol ban in the middle of town and the area as well. So we did mention that in a previous, I think maybe with my previous interview with Lisa, it might be in a write-up on the RaglanRadio.com website with the exact information. We could go to the council website, but it's easier to find things on ours because there's not so much stuff on it.
Yep. So if you feel strongly one way or the other, then now's the time to look at the council's website, look for the Say It tab up at the top and have your say.
Okay.
And come along tonight to the 6 o'clock meeting in the club.
Yeah, so that's about the wastewater. What are we going to do with the disposing the wastewater in the community? They've got plans, and they're going to be water care and the council, and councillor, and probably community board members are all going to be there to tell us about it. And you can ask questions, probably. I'd say probably, because I'm not in charge of that. All right, John, thanks for coming in.